Hello there. Welcome to episode 64 of the SWNZ podcast, the podcast for New Zealand Star Wars fans. My name is Matt.
And my name is Christy.
We're back, and it's been a big week for news from a galaxy far, far away. So let's jump in and talk Star Wars. First on the list, fresh up on the internet when we got up this morning, was the long-awaited Obi-Wan Kenobi trailer. Obi-Wan Kenobi is set to stream on Disney Plus on May the 25th. We've got a few weeks before that comes out, but the trailer has given us a first real taste and tease for what to expect from this series. It's going to feel quite a bit different from The Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett because it has a distinctly different writer and director, and it is billed as a limited series, which means it will be wrapped up in its entirety in 6 episodes. So I think the overall story structure will be a little bit different from The Book of Boba Fett and The Mandalorian as well. So let's take a quick look at some of the details we saw. First up, of course, Ewan McGregor portraying Obi-Wan Kenobi. That was an absolute highlight to hear his voice in the Obi-Wan style once again. We also saw the first reveal of Rupert Friend as the Grand Inquisitor, Moses Ingram as a new Inquisitor, the third sister named Reva, Sung Kang as the fifth brother, Indira Varma as an Imperial officer, and Joel Edgerton as Owen Lars. Just briefly, we see glimpses of Beru Lars and an interesting highlight, a very young Luke Skywalker seen on the Lars homestead. Not seen in the trailer just yet, but highly anticipated is, of course, Hayden Christensen returning as Darth Vader. Just mention that there's a number of other names that we do know of that are associated with Obi-Wan Kenobi that have been officially revealed, but we do not know what characters they're playing because we did not see them in this trailer, including Simone Kessel, a Kiwi actress, Kumail Nanjiani, O'Shea Jackson Jr., and Benny Safdie.
Yeah, this was a really fun surprise to wake up to this morning. Obviously, I kind of wish they give fans a little bit of a heads up. You know, in New Zealand, we often wake up and find that this has been on the internet for a while, you know, just as we're sort of doing after breakfast, Facebook scrolling and that, and then boom, it's everywhere. And you kind of wish that you could be there at the time where it drops for Americans, or at least get a bit of a heads up. I know in the past, sometimes where there's pretty strong rumors, or they have announced a trailer will drop, then you get up in the middle of the night to make sure you can see it as soon as the trailer drops, refreshing that YouTube channel page. But anyway, it was super fun to see this. Seeing Ewan, I felt really nostalgic seeing Joel Edgerton back as Owen Lars. There's something like, I don't know, maybe because we just knew that this was going to be Ewan McGregor all over, but somehow seeing Joel back as Owen Lars, it just sort of really connected it to the prequel series. I think we don't often see a lot of the really prequel era actors showing up in other places within the Star Wars universe.
Despite the decades since the prequels, he, along with Ewan, obviously really still looked the part, just so immediately recognisable as the characters they previously portrayed. And I think that was a really strong connection, like you say. I'm excited about those returning characters as much as I am about the overall story and Ewan playing Obi-Wan.
Yeah, it looks like it's not just sort of a passing cameo, that he seems to be integral to the plot here, or at least has some significant scenes. It's not just like we see at the sort of start with Obi-Wan looking at them from a distance and kind of, you know, watching them. You would want them to return so that they play those roles, you know, and get a few close-ups and things like that. But as we see, you know, him being face-to-face with an Inquisitor, I don't think this is just going to be a moment for him.
I get the impression that he's protecting Obi-Wan with his silence and facing repercussions because of that, and I suspect that's the basis for his resentment of Obi-Wan down the line and him wanting to protect Luke from Ben Kenobi in some ways.
And of course, since his sort of early days in the prequel films, Joel has had some really good success in Hollywood. He's gone on to one of the things that I particularly know him from in recent years is, well, not so recent now, but The Great Gatsby, where he plays one of the main characters in that. And so it's sort of fun to see him rise and do very well in his career, but of course still coming back to one of the films that really put him on the map, with the prequel films, of course, being filmed. Episode 2 and 3 were filmed in the sort of Fox Studios in Sydney in Australia. So it's fun to see some sort of local talent being returning people in there. And of course, very, very keen to see Simone Kessel, whatever character, whatever role she gets to play, very keen to see her. And then of course, the big one, everyone's waiting to see Hayden. I know they want to keep that reveal for the show itself, but I think that would have been perhaps a break the internet moment if they had put just a little glimpse of Vader. Well,
they specifically called this a teaser. There is a theoretical possibility of a full trailer in advance of the May the 25th release date, so we'll keep our fingers crossed for something potentially a little bigger during that, because this one here really was just about themes. It introduced a few characters but didn't go into detail other than sort of themes conveying the degree of action. We saw in total basically three locations. Much of it was on Tatooine. They've introduced a new planet, Dayu, which is a sort of neon holograms, massive city type, cityscape type planet. And the other location we kind of get a glimpse at is the headquarters of the Inquisitorius, which was first introduced in the video game Jedi Fallen Order. The base for the Inquisitors is located on the water moon of Nur, and we just sort of see a little bit of the outskirts of that and some interior scenes as well. So like I say, lots of scattered shots, scattered frames within this trailer. We've put up a screenshot gallery on the SWNZ website, so do check that out if you want to take a look at all the details that are just moving too fast for the eye to catch in the real time of the 1.5 minute trailer. You can work through those scene by scene on the SWNZ website. We'll put a link below. But yeah, we saw a lot, lots of detail, lots of interesting sort of visuals and imagery.
Yeah, I particularly like seeing the EOP, the sort of Tatooine creature we first see in The Phantom Menace. And of course, we see Obi-Wan riding one when he goes to sort of deliver Luke to Owen and Beru Lars at the very end of episode 3. So it's kind of fun that he seems to still have it, or at least has kept up with having that as sort of a form of transport. We do see in the trailer that he's riding some sort of train.
Public transport of some sort.
That looks like it's on Tatooine.
Yeah.
We see some fun little glimpses of the Inquisitor spinning lightsaber. I think that was always a fun moment in Rebels, of course, that moment where we discovered that they can not just have the double-bladed lightsabers, but they spin as well. And one moment right towards the end that really stood out to me was what looked to be the sort of green bird Morai that are often closely associated with Ahsoka Tano.
There's a whole flock of them. And
you say
often associated, but I'm struggling to think of an instance where they haven't sort of heralded her presence in some shape or form. So that's interesting.
So,
I hope it's not misdirection.
Yeah, certainly that's what I'm thinking, seeing that. I mean, I know Dave Filoni is not heavily involved in this one, but he's pretty high up in Lucasfilm, and it wouldn't be a beyond his powers to just sort of say, hey, can you like add this touch? If indeed it is Ahsoka they're going to include parts because he knows that character better than anyone. So yeah, I obviously, you know, Rosario Dawson is fantastic as Ahsoka in the live action renditions in The Book of Boba Fett and The Mandalorian. So the timeline kind of fits. This would be around sort of the Rebels era, and we know that Ahsoka is helping the rebellion in the capacity of sort of the spy fulcrum. So
she's active but not immediately present in the early Rebels era. She doesn't show up until just a shade down the line.
Yeah, so And we know that Obi-Wan and Ahsoka know each other so well and have this shared pain of what happened to Anakin. I think it would be really, really interesting if they included her, even for a brief while, if she just kind of, you know, helped Obi-Wan in passing for a moment, you know, whether it's just a little bit painful to be around each other because it just makes them remember everything that happened in the Clone Wars in episode 3. But the presence of distinctly green birds in what looks like a city, yeah, that just screams out to me that is a tease that we may or may not have known. We know that there has been certain rumors on the internet that Hayden Christensen will appear in the Ahsoka series in some capacity.
That was basically an accidental leak from Rosario herself, where she made reference to, she called him Sky Guy on social media.
So we don't know there whether that will be in like a flashback form back to her time with Anakin, or some sort of, you know, passing with Vader, whether they have some sort of glancing interaction there. But the idea of her coming over and being in this would really lead up to her own series, you know, if she gets to help out Obi-Wan. And it would be kind of nice that the two of them have a final sort of parting time together, because obviously we know that he eventually dies on the Death Star. That's not a big spoiler. And then, you know, she has her own adventures beyond that. And so it would be really interesting to see if they just sort of had like a final parting moment after everything, because we don't sort of get complete closure on some of these stories because of, you know, Order 66 and everything that happens. I think that that would be really fun. But all in all, this is about Kenobi and Ewan McGregor, of course, and I think Star Wars fans everywhere are just so amped for this series and seeing him back. I know it's kind of fun seeing him with slightly more prequel era hair. I was wondering which way they would go, whether they would make him look a little more like episode 2, episode 3, or push him to full sort of Alec Guinness short hair with the beard. So it's kind of interesting that they've found sort of a middle ground here, that he's got longer hair, like sort of a little bit nomadic, a little bit longer than we see him in episode 3, but still not the sort of short Alec Guinness haircut. So that's really fun. And I do really hope we get some awesome, awesome lightsaber battles or some sort of action here for Kenobi.
Yeah, it's interesting. We saw him using, it appears that it is Obi-Wan that's using a blaster. In this, we haven't seen him ignite a lightsaber. There are some additional frames of material out there via the Entertainment Weekly website in conjunction with this. The cover of Entertainment Weekly has Obi-Wan Kenobi with an ignited lightsaber. It's all photoshopped up. But so, yeah, we can expect to see that, and that's going to be pretty exciting, and I'm sure going to be a bit jaw-dropping when that finally happens on screen again.
It certainly would not really make for a satisfying series if we see Obi-Wan never pull out his lightsaber and do battle when there are multiple Inquisitors in this, all wielding lightsabers.
We see a lot of red blades in this trailer.
Yes, yeah. I mean, if he pulled out his lightsaber in the cantina to sort of protect Luke against, you know, some local Tatooine scum and villainy, he's definitely going to have to pull it out against an Inquisitor. But yeah, they didn't quite give us that in the trailer. So here's hoping we get just a little bit more glimpse before the full series drops. Still kind of sad that this isn't like as many episodes of The Mandalorian or The Book of Boba Fett even. Well, but of course, all total, this is going to be more minutes, than a standalone movie. So yeah, fans are just going
to... The original concept was for this to be in a movie format, and it evolved to this, which gives us much more screen time, as you say, and probably that'll be a lot more satisfying in order to tell a story with sufficient level of detail. So yeah, it won't be quite as episodic and strung out as Book of Boba Fett or The Mandalorian, which is coming up on its third season, and we won't, it'll be sad when it's over because we won't have any more of it, but it will be telling an epic story, and I think that's exciting.
Yeah, it's really sort of cementing the concept that not really any character is free from sort of exploration in a deeper format or external stories. Like, there kind of used to be this division between the main Skywalker saga and then sort of the expanded universe, where we tell the stories of other people that aren't directly related. And maybe once or twice, you know, we'd have a main sort of character come in, like Vader or something like that, to kind of tie it in. But taking such a core character as Obi-Wan and sort of giving a side story kind of makes me feel like there's a bunch of bits and pieces that could totally get their own sort of series. I mean, I still ponder at night about whether we will actually see some sort of series centered on a sort of Luke in sort of the young sort of Jedi training academy sort of eras, you know, after Return of the Jedi, sort of like, because we saw bits of it in Book of Boba Fett, and I'm like, I don't know if that's like a test to see if the concept could work. Could they basically have a lead character that's completely sort of computer generated in terms of the likeness and the voice? I'm like, I would love to see more of that. I really do. I hope that we get more than just what we saw in the Book of Boba Fett. Who knows? Maybe he'll just show up a lot more in The Mandalorian. But either way, I want more of that. Because, yeah, we're getting all of this extra Obi-Wan material. I don't think Luke or many other characters would be completely off the cards. I would love to see more. After this, it's going to leave fans desperately wanting more cool Star Wars stories, you know?
Oh, and they're going to have to announce so much. Exciting times. We have a bit of a feel for what's going to be happening over the next year or so, but beyond that, anything is up for grabs. Any story, any character, any era is up for grabs. And we'll touch on that a little in a moment or two when we talk about some other production news, actually. Just to round out the conversation now, just hitting on a few other additional details. I liked seeing the original trilogy Stormtroopers, mostly in conjunction with the Inquisitors. But it's going to be interesting to see, because Obi-Wan, his story mainly revolves around associations with clone troopers, not stormtroopers. So it's going to be a bit of a new scene for him, as that sort of morphs into the original trilogy era. And the other thing that was kind of interesting there is just a few brief frames was this new droid. Really have no idea how that character fits in. A new droid that shows up, and the scenes move too quickly to really sort of see what role it's playing, but it's an interesting new design. Okay, like I say, I do hope that we'll get maybe a little bit more information before the series starts, because on one hand it's actually pretty close, but then on the other hand, every day without new Star Wars content is a little bit hard these days when we've been spoiled to the extent that we have over the last little while. So yeah, we'll be talking about this as new information comes out over the next few weeks leading up to May the 25th. But before we fully depart, I just wanted to touch on the notion of music in this trailer, because there were some interesting music pieces. And it was a couple of weeks back that we got confirmation that John Williams is returning to the Star Wars universe and contributing a specific theme, an Obi-Wan Kenobi theme, to this series that was published by Variety.com back in February. That's super exciting. I've loved the music for the other live-action series so far, but just having John Williams involved at this level, and it started to come through in this trailer because they made use of some other existing musical themes and threads in the trailer.
It wasn't clear if we got a segment of the Obi-Wan theme in this trailer. Obviously, for fans, the Duel of the Fates theme playing in there was, you know, that was sort of almost chilling to sort of get that sort of music back, obviously harking all the way back to the sort of the Phantom Menace era. And for fans of video games, there is a moment at the end that sounds very, very much like they have taken it directly from the Star Wars The Old Republic cinematic trailer, Deceived. There is a moment where, after sort of launching an attack on the Jedi Council, Darth Malgus is walking away from the destruction and all the sort of killed Jedi, and he's putting his hood up and walking away, and there's a very distinctive piece of music that plays, and it plays at the end of this trailer, which kind of, I don't know.
It's quite an ominous piece of music, it really did stand out.
It's an interesting note, because it's not common particularly to have notes of Star Wars The Old Republic referenced elsewhere, sort of in Disney-produced stuff.
It may have just been opportunistic, because we know often that trailers are just put together with material that's on hand and may not reflect the final product, particularly in terms of the music. But yeah, very, very interesting they did it for this trailer.
Yeah, like I think perhaps, like as you say, they just have a big database of all the Star Wars music produced out there, and they just kind of put bits and pieces together as they like it. I still wish that we got the Solo trailer music released in some official capacity, because that was really fun music, and then it doesn't really ever appear in the movie itself. Yeah. I wish that they would be a little bit better with sort of putting a lot of the stuff in a publicly accessible manner. But yeah, definitely keen to hear, because I'm sure that they will release an official track online with the Obi-Wan Kenobi theme, so we will know what it is, and so that we can listen out and see where it's used as we watch the series, so that we can applaud John Williams and just sort of bask in that awesomeness.
It's a big deal in order to tie it into the original trilogy and prequel trilogy, having him involved at this level, both conceptually but also in the final product, because he plays such a big role in the atmosphere of the Star Wars material that we've consumed. You've had the pleasure of seeing him conduct live, haven't you?
Yeah, that was a pretty immense moment. And I know fans in America get to see him on not too infrequent basis. He does do sort of symphony orchestra nights, conducting some of his most famous music, where fans can go along and watch him conduct. But yeah, he did play at Celebration to honor Carrie Fisher after she had passed away for the big sort of 40th anniversary panel. That was a very big shock to sort of see him being revealed on stage with all the sort of musicians there. It was a really powerful and moving moment. So I'm very much looking forward to sort of hearing the return of John Williams to the Star Wars sort of legacy with this new piece.
Okay, we touched on just briefly there, just as a coincidence, the use of Star Wars The Old Republic music in this trailer, but that's quite a good segue to move on and talk about Star Wars The Old Republic news, because since we last did a podcast, the expansion 7.0 has come out, and that was preceded just by a matter of days by a new cinematic trailer. The cinematic trailer was interesting in its own right, because it heralds the start of a story that's going to be progressively released in-game over the rest of the year, introduce new characters and new concepts. It's quite a bit of a branching away from where the story's been going so far, but it was fantastic to see that near live-action quality in a cinematic trailer. We've only had a number of instances in the past. So the 7.0 release, it's a work in progress. There's been a few hurdles that they're yet to get over in order to fully smooth things out. And the reason for that is because they've made major changes on the back end in order to future-proof it in many ways in terms of quality of life, but also capability of the game and the game mechanics. And not all of that has gone as smoothly as they would have liked, but it is being ironed out as we speak.
It's a pretty big undertaking to make a 10-year-old game, yeah, sort of keeping up with technology, making sure that the graphics are running, because the game feels like it's like, what, 3 to 5 times bigger than when it launched, considering you played up to about Ilum, and then we've had McKeeb onwards with the huge big expansions and story with the Knights of the Fallen Empire and everything like that, all these huge chunks that they've added on to. So I can understand there being a bit of sort of teething issues, making sure that the huge big under the hood changes and improvements are not quite completely polished. I do appreciate that they didn't keep pushing it out, that they gave it to us now to go and play, and the rest of the bugs are going to get ironed out over the next couple of weeks.
I still think it's a good time for new players to jump in and get started, because by the time you get your characters all up to end game levels, a lot of the bits and pieces that need fixing will have been fully fixed.
Yeah, as you say, the little bugs and things like that will be fixed, but I'm hearing a lot of chatter, and certainly from my own experience, because of the way that they've changed basically the combats and stuff like that, everyone's kind of relearning how to play their characters in that. So if you think about sort of jumping into a lot of Star Wars games, particularly if you are a completely new player, it feels a bit daunting to be playing alongside other people. You can't kill other players in this game, not unless you specifically play on a player versus player instance where anybody's sort of free game. So most of the time you're running around doing your own thing, other people can't attack you, but still you're playing around other people. It can feel a bit daunting. So I like the fact that it feels like everyone's on an even playing field. We're all kind of relearning how to sort of play. There's a lot of options with how you're setting your characters up. I'm still going through my big list of characters, making all the sort of the tactical changes and things like that to how I want to play my characters, what sort of class they want to be. So it's kind of like not like a complete reset, but it's an interesting point to come into, especially with this new storyline that looks amazing.
Yeah, so the new storyline seems to revolve around Darth Malgus, who was there right at the very start. At one point, you supposedly believed him to be dead, having killed him in one of the group flashpoints in the game, or at least vanquishing
defeated him.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's cool that the story has come back to him, because he's a character that the marketing's really emphasized right from the get-go in the early cinematic trailers, and he's had probably the most product released associated with him since that time.
Yeah, he was even like around the marketing, there is action figures of him, mini bust statues, there was a Sideshow 12 inch, and Sideshow even made a life-size statue of Darth Malgus, which sadly would have been very, very expensive to try and get here in New Zealand, but that, oh my gosh, that was a wish list piece. But he's one of those characters that kind of transcends the game and sort of makes it to sort of mainstream popularity. Very much like Darth Revan, sort of, you know, extending out from Knights of the Old Republic. Even people that haven't played these games are fans of the design and the character, and I would love to see more of these characters. So if you're a fan of Darth Malgus or have ever seen him, think he's cool, he's definitely a major component in this game, especially in this new storyline, so it's definitely worth playing.
Well, there's some really cool trivia associated with Darth Malgus that I'll just throw into the mix here. He's voiced by Jamie Glover, has been since the start. Jamie Glover is actually the son of Julian Glover, who played General Veers in the original trilogy. He also played Walter Donovan in Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade. Julian Glover played General Veers in the live-action material. Jamie Glover, the son, was the voice of General Maximilian Veers in Battlefront 2, and he's also done other characters in Knights of the Old Republic and Force Unleashed. Really interesting connection there, just as a bit of trivia, I think. Okay, sticking to the topic of production news, let's talk about the recently discovered High Republic series. It's got a working title of Grammar Rodeo, and so far no official information, so everything we're going to talk about here is kind of leaked or rumored, to be honest. But what we do know about it is that there have been some casting calls that have been publicly made available, and although it's not solidly tied to a High Republic series, all the pieces fit together. They are looking for, in particular, actors in the sort of young teen age range and a sort of role model character in the 30s to 40s age range. So there is some work actually taking place in terms of casting associated with this highly likely High Republic series that we'll be seeing on Disney Plus probably in a couple of years' time at this rate. The other interesting bit of trivia associated with this is that John Watts has supposedly been in talks to potentially direct one or more episodes of this series. Now, John Watts, of course, is responsible for a lot of the success of the new Spider-Man movie. He has had a role with previous Spider-Man movies. Spider-Man No Way Home currently earned over $1.8 billion at the worldwide box office. John Watts is quite busy at this point in time. He's got three major projects on at the moment, including the Fantastic Four revamp for Marvel Studios and other titles like a Final Destination film for New Line and HBO. But it would be interesting, because of his relationship to Marvel, that he might be able to have another role in the Disney Star Wars universe, because he's had a lot of success and got a lot of respect because of that.
We know in the new era of Disney, particularly with their sort of tentpole Marvel Star Wars sort of franchises and that, it seems like once somebody comes into the fold, does something for Disney that is wildly successful, Disney's basically they get rewarded with other sort of projects on ongoing work, because they're like, okay, you were good to work with, you made something that made us money, Here's a favor back, more work to do. So this isn't at all surprising. Spider-Man No Way Home was way popular, and I could see them wanting to keep that kind of success, that talent in-house, not as sort of losing them off to go do other franchises and things like that. So, and certainly any kind of vague news leading to new series episodes being filmed and stuff like that, I'm always excited to see.
Yeah, so nothing official yet, but all the pieces are starting to fit together, so I think it's probably going to head in this direction. Some of the details may change, but it's looking like this will be something that we'll be seeing on our screens down the line.
It definitely makes a lot of sense. The High Republic series has been popular. They've got more books, more comics coming out, you know, the Star Wars Eclipse game being announced sort of to tie into this era. I think it is a no-brainer that they make a live-action series to tie into this. I think that would really amplify the sort of era and the storytelling surrounding this sort of cluster of conflicts and characters and things like that. I think that would really all fit together so perfectly.
There's a cool bit of particularly Star Wars Kiwi news that really sort of dominated a few weeks back in February. Papamoa artist Graham Huete, who goes by the name of Mr. G, honored Star Wars actor Temuera Morrison with a carved Boba Fett helmet, like a wooden carved Boba Fett helmet. We heard about this through the official Star Wars channels when he was working on it, but when he actually gifted it to Temuera when he was back in Rotorua, there were quite a few really cool videos online and quite a bit of mainstream media coverage. You probably saw a lot of this on social media, but if you didn't see all of the coverage, we'll put a couple of links down below to the New Zealand Herald coverage and newshub.co.nz, which has some really cool official photographs from that ceremony. And so congratulations to Mr. G for sort of fulfilling a dream of many Star Wars fans to be involved in Star Wars at an official level like that. You know, according to things that he said himself, he's been a Boba Fett in particular fan since his childhood, since he was growing up and drawing Boba Fett early on. He's done other unofficial Star Wars sort of artwork, big Boba Fett murals that's available to see on his personal social media channel. So yeah, I think that's really cool. Really cool local news, and really happy for him to have had that degree of success and that connection.
Yeah, the finished artwork was really quite beautiful, all the sort of little touches to it. And I particularly like the sort of videos where he's sort of pointing out the details to Temuera. That must have been a really neat moment. And I'm glad that media was there to sort of capture it. I thought we might just get a few pictures on a couple of different channels, and that was that.
But actually, it's really celebrated locally across all mainstream media, as well as on international official Star Wars channels. So yeah, I think that recognition was really cool. Unfortunately, we have to report a couple of items of sadder news, a couple of passings of key Star Wars players. Alan Ladd Jr. passed away at the age of 84 in the past week. He's an Oscar-winning producer and was a studio boss at 20th Century Fox, who personally was the executive who greenlit Star Wars. A lot of you are probably familiar with the basics of the story, but Star Wars, you know, had a bit of a troubled start. You know, it was George Lucas's passion project and he really wanted to get it done, but he couldn't do it without money. And because of some complexities of production wherein, you know, they were going over budget, they weren't really getting a lot of the material that they could edit the final product out of, it was not looking good at various points in time, but Alan Ladd Jr. really stuck by George Lucas. He had faith in him. He had faith in his artistic skill, largely as a consequence of seeing his work on American Graffiti, as I understand it. And without that support from, you know, his personal support, actually standing up against other studio executives who weren't quite as strongly supportive of Star Wars in its early days, we wouldn't have the final product that we have now. So I'm sad to hear of Alan Ladd Jr.'s passing. George Lucas paid tribute to Alan Ladd shortly after his death. In a statement, he says, "Laddie loved film and believed in filmmakers. He was one of the few executives who bet on the person rather than the project. Without Laddie, there would be no Star Wars. He didn't understand what Star Wars was about, but he believed in me and supported my vision. Quiet and thoughtful, he had an independent spirit that gave so many storytellers a chance. He stood up to the studios and went with his gut instinct. Laddie took a great personal and professional risk on Star Wars and on me, and for that I will be forever grateful." And also, we have to mention that Tom Veitch, the writer of the Dark Empire comics, passed away in February at the age of 80. Tom Veitch made a significant contribution to the Star Wars universe because he initiated the Dark Horse comics line, effectively, at a time when there wasn't Star Wars comics after the hiatus since the early Marvel comics. Tom Veitch was the writer for the Dark Empire series and the Tales of the Jedi series. Dark Empire was a 6-issue limited series written by Veitch and drawn by Cam Kennedy, followed up by a second 6-issue limited series, Dark Empire 2, also written by Veitch, and then a 2-issue limited series, finally also written by Veitch but drawn by a different artist, Empire's End. The initial series is notable for being one of the first Star Wars comics to be produced by Dark Horse Comics, who acquired the comic rights for the Star Wars franchise in the early 90s. Dark Empire was set 6 years after Return of the Jedi and subsequent to the Timothy Zahn Thrawn trilogy, and it really in some ways set down the tone and some concepts that have been carried on through all the way to the sequel trilogy even. Tales of the Jedi, written by Veitch, is also quite a significant component of the Star Wars expanded universe because it describes the Great Sith War and the Great Hyperspace War. Veitch wrote Knights of the Old Republic, which was published in 1993, The Freedom Lad Uprising, and co-wrote Dark Lords of the Sith with Kevin J. Anderson, who went on to write the subsequent series. And this led into such titles as the video game Knights of the Old Republic, which took place 40 years after the Sith War described in the Tales of the Jedi. So really key moments in Star Wars history written by Tom Veitch, and again someone that we really sort of owe a lot to in terms of structuring some of the early aspects of various parts of Star Wars.
Yeah, very sad to find that two very sort of significant contributors to Star Wars and its legacy have passed away. I know that as we pass 40 plus years since A New Hope, people that were around in the sort of early eras to really sort of build on George Lucas's vision are unfortunately going to pass on, but yeah, we hope that they had a success and, you know, fulfilling life.
Oh yeah, and we fully appreciate their contribution without a doubt, because they've really, really shaped things. And yeah, Alan Ladd Jr. was an executive at the time that Star Wars was being produced, so it makes sense that he was in his 80s at this point in time. I was a little surprised to hear about Tom Veitch, to be honest, but when we stop and reflect on it, those books were coming out in the early 90s. Star Wars has been with us for a very, very long time, and a lot of people have made significant contributions along the way. Moving on to a little bit of a product announcement, there has been a new Han and Leia novel officially announced. It's going to be entitled The Princess and the Scoundrel, and that was announced on StarWars.com. We'll put a link below to the full news announcement for that. This book is set just after the events of Star Wars Return of the Jedi. The story begins on the forest moon of Endor, where Han has just proposed to Leia during the elation of the rebel victory against the Empire. After a ceremony at the site of the victory celebration at the end of the film, the newlyweds depart for a honeymoon aboard the Halcyon Star Cruiser. That's a little bit interesting. The Halcyon Star Cruiser is, of course, the Galactic Star Cruiser that is basically the Star Wars hotel at Disney World. It's set up to be the Halcyon Star Cruiser, and so that's part of the role-playing involved with that new venture. Obviously, it's a little bit of a key marketing move to include that into a story. Maybe a shade cheesy. We'll see how it pans out when we actually read the book. Hopefully, it doesn't come across as too forced, but I am looking forward to reading some of the other material associated with the Galactic Star Cruiser. There's a Halcyon comic series, and hopefully it all sort of ties together with the story that makes sense. But I'm looking forward to that Princess and the Scoundrel novel, I think on a number of levels, because it's a story that hasn't been told in the current canon yet.
Yeah, when I heard this, I was super, super excited. Obviously, I'm a big Princess Leia fan. Any book that kind of centers on her and Han together, I'm super excited about. But I was a little bit disappointed to find the mention of the Halcyon. It sort of feels like this is the sort of thing to get fans all excited because they now need to go on the Halcyon Star Cruiser, the Galactic Star Cruiser Hotel, to kind of follow on from Han and Leia. This is about as close to sort of following in their footsteps, or, you know, getting Star Wars couples to go along to the hotel so they can kind of, you know, play out, you know, some a cute sort of Star Wars romantic getaway, because let's face it, you're probably not paying to go on this trip with a carload full of kids with you. You're not really going to be able to take the time to experience all the activities on board if you're dealing with naps and nappy changes and things like that. So it feels like they're kind of marketing it at, you know, at an adult target here because of the money, and certainly making it seem like it's a good honeymoon destination by writing a whole book about it. Perhaps that's a little bit of a cynical take. I'm still hoping I really, really enjoy the book. But yeah, it's a sort of, I was not expecting it to be quite the tie-in.
No. I mean, there have been comic series that tie into Galaxy's Edge and coming out to the Halcyon Star Cruiser that introduced, that tangentially make use of existing characters, but this is so tightly tied into the original trilogy. I hope that it stands up to, you know, what we expect from the original trilogy and isn't too much of a marketing push. It doesn't come across as too much of a marketing push. Okay, speaking of the Galactic Star Cruiser Hotel, the first public flights, voyages, have actually just taken place as of the start of March, and a lot of people have been talking about it online.
Yeah, everyone was like, I guess, really curious about how this one would play out. I know that there was a lot of chatter talking about how bad the sort of pre-launch marketing was. We heard reports of basically bookings opening up again because people were cancelling, because it is a lot of money. It's many thousands of US dollars to pay for this two-night essentially trip, of the sort of itinerary stay at the hotel with an excursion to Galaxy's Edge at Walt Disney World. So we first got reports because there was basically a paid sort of like a free media day, well, media night, where influencers and media outlets could go and experience and stuff like that. So of course, there was a lot of buzz because these people were given this trip for free. It's a little bit different when you're paying your own money and whether you think you got the sort of the quality value out of it that you were expecting, or just the general experience, whether you liked it or not. And now that we've had a couple of days, it's now been a little over a week since that first public sailing where people paid their own money. So we're getting sort of like full proper, what I would say, a little bit more authentic reports. Mm-hmm. I still think that the people that rushed out and got the first sailings are still, I still see a big percentage from the quote-unquote influencer market, the people that run podcasts and websites and YouTube channels. They wanted content. They want to be the first ones to go. So I'm still seeing quite a lot of those sorts of videos, those sorts of reviews coming out. And I feel like we're going to start to see a little bit more authentic families and people that were still super excited about it because they paid for it, they booked early and they went. But I'm seeing some people saying that it can be a little bit different depending on what you expect and what you take into it. Yeah. I've seen some people talking about that there is still a lot of work to improve it, that there needs to be stuff done. It's not as sort of dressed up in costume as perhaps people were expecting. I've seen reports saying it's about a third in costume and the other two thirds are just kind of in t-shirts and jeans. So it'll be really interesting to see as the weeks roll on whether that initial excitement dies down or whether it really does stand up to closer scrutiny, and whether this will still be something that in 12 months from now people will be desperately trying to book, especially with the likes of Celebration being so soon. I think perhaps a lot of people were really split, even for Americans, Celebration is still an expensive trip. It's right there next to Disneyland. You've still got to pay for hotels and flights from whatever state you live in. You're going to want spending money. You know, it's going to cost you hundreds, if not thousands, depending on how many people are in your family and are going. So I think perhaps after Celebration, we might see more people, more sort of families affording to go, and then we'll see really whether it's going to be the sort of thing that I think New Zealand fans will want to go, you know, when we sort of feel comfortable traveling to the States.
Yeah, on the whole, the reports I think are good, but maybe not excellent. There are, you know, I think it's done better than some of the early marketing missteps represented, which is a good thing on the whole. I think the main criticisms that have come through is that the itinerary is very tight, feels quite rushed over 2 days in some ways. The actual physical aspects of the building are quite constrained, so it is a little bit claustrophobic. But the other main thing that kind of stood out to me was that to really make use of the role-playing aspect of it, to really get into the story, you have to be quite an extrovert. If you're a bit of an introvert that doesn't necessarily have all the energy to interact with other people on a continual basis, then you'll be missing out on quite a lot of the story aspects to it. And that's a bit of a challenge for, you know, I think outside of America, there's probably a few more introverts that are Star Wars fans, and they will be disappointed by that.
Yeah, one of the things that I picked up on from some of the sort of social media posts was that it looks like for a large part, the storyline of sort of the ship is all played sort of once through. You're not split into sections and then kind of you get to experience this section and then they kind of close the doors and then the next people go in and get to experience. It seems like it's all kind of done all at once, so that people aren't kind of catching it happening twice, because I saw some people talk about that they missed a sort of an action sequence, part of the big storytelling, because they were off having a drink. So it kind of doesn't let you just take a moment of a breather, because you will miss some big dramatic moment. And the other thing was that, as you say, you need to be an extrovert. You need to basically be comfortable acting in public, because that's essentially what you have to do. You've got to be acting alongside the paid cast members to sort of be in the role, and you've got to pretend like you're in Star Wars. And doing it with a lot of people around you, you've got to be sort of, you know, going up to them and interacting with them, joining in with the big sort of group activities, kind of like being the one singled out of the crowd at comedy shows to like get up on stage and help somebody. I feel like there's a little bit of that going on. And yeah, perhaps that's a little bit more something that Americans are fond of, and perhaps not so much in other cultures. I don't know. I'm not particularly fond of jumping up on stage in front of a lot of people. I know you're not on stage, but you're still kind of performing in front of the people around you, you know, because there aren't like multiple captains. There's one captain. So if you want to interact with that captain, you've got to talk to and sort of basically act in front of them. And I think that's a little easier to do if you're in full get up. I noticed that cosplayers are sort of reporting on the different rules. I noticed somebody mentioned that they were only allowed to wear their Mandalorian helmet when they were specifically taking photos. The rest of the time they weren't allowed to wear them. I didn't necessarily see people wearing medical face masks in the pictures that I've seen.
Those specific rules
It seems that that wasn't necessary, and it looks like lightsabers were fine so long as you didn't have the blade on them. You could take your hilt, but no blasters. They would not allow blasters. I saw a couple of Mandalorian cosplayers sort of grumbling that they couldn't pose the way that they really wanted to because they had to leave all their blasters at home. But that, in America, that's kind of understandable. It's really hard. They don't want anything that looks like a gun. Famously, a few years, they redesigned all the bubble-blowing devices at the parks to not look like blasters and guns. They all look like magic wands now, because they don't want anything that looks like it could fire a projectile.
There have been reports, even in the last 12 months, there have been reports of people literally bringing weapons, supposedly thinking that their concealed weapon permits gave them permission to do so, into the Disney parks.
And getting arrested for it. Yeah, so I understand why they would clamp down hard on that. But it does look like you can wear full armor. There were people walking around in full Mandalorian armor on the things. And so I saw some people say that they wanted to get in early because they don't know if Disney's going to clamp down on that and kind of go, that's a little bit bulky. We didn't actually mean that kind of cosplay. They wanted you to basically buy the fabric robes and costumes that they sell. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they tweak some of those rules over time. I understand about the no blasters and not really wearing helmets all the time. I think that's a little bit of a security issue as well. But yeah, I'm curious to see how the sort of the public perception of this holds up over the coming months. Obviously, there might be a few of you out there that were just super excited about this and have saved up and are ready to go now that we don't have isolation requirements coming back into New Zealand. It'll be really interesting to see if any of you out there do go. I'm super jealous, to be honest. I think that this is a bucket list item for me. I would love to do it sometime, even though it costs a lot of money. I think a lot of people would just be like, you know what, it would be kind of fun to see. Perhaps I think a lot of people might be sitting on the fence waiting to see if the price goes down after like a year or two as like the action-packed demand. We all know that there are like on-peak rates and off-peak rates for hotels. It'll be interesting to see if this hotel eventually settles into something like that, where they're like, okay, go in the middle of winter and you'll get a cheaper rate, or they do some specials or something like that to sort of fill in a few cabins because they want as many people as there as possible to kind of make the performance element worth it. It's going to be a little less enthusiastic if there's like half the hotel there cheering for the action sequences. I do give a word of warning. If you watch any of the YouTube videos, there is story elements that will be completely spoiled if you watch them. I was a little bit disappointed that people didn't really seem to be giving spoiler warnings on Instagram reels, TikToks, YouTube videos. And if you want to go in there not really knowing what the story is, the videos will just completely destroy it for you. It was cool, I have to admit, it did look cool, but there was no spoiler warning. And I'm like, okay, now I know what happens, you know, like, I'm sure there'll be a little bit different going in person, but you're paying a lot of money to kind of play a story. And if you know what the ending is, it's maybe not as exciting if you know what happens. So yeah, just do be warned. If this is on your to-do list, maybe be wary of what videos or what content you go seeking out for reviews. Maybe written reviews might be better. But yeah, I want to go. Maybe sometime in the future, we'll see what the cost and the overall sort of vibe is about this. But yeah.
Okay, let's move on and just run through a bit of a mix of product announcements and store reports. First up, I want to talk about Farmers and the latest Black Series wave. A little while back, the warehouse had the wave that includes Fennec Shan, the Tython, Boba Fett, and the Jedi Patrol Stormtrooper. They were pretty popular, and I can understand why, and they sold out pretty fast. But now Farmers have got them in pretty good stocks around the country. So if you want those waves, you should be reasonably able to do them. Particularly keen on the, well, all three of those, actually. Fennec Shand, Boba Fett, the Tython version, and the Jedi Patrol Stormtrooper. Interestingly, Farmers at the moment, the figures are currently priced at $42.99, but they're running a buy one, get one half price sale. Other figures that they have in the Black Series line include other recent characters such as Miggs Mayfeld, Ceremonial Princess Leia, Dr. Everson, Ponda Baba, Koska Reeves, Tech from The Bad Batch, General Lando, and Bo-Katan. Yeah, like I say, very cool wave, and it's nice to see in particular that Jedi Patrol Stormtrooper easily accessible on the shelves, and Temuera Morrison as Boba Fett in his Tython robes.
Yeah, the Tython Boba technically is labeled as the Mandalorian series, but this is pretty similar, if not identical, to his Tusken Raider black robes that we see him wear in a lot of episodes of the Book of Boba Fett. So the team up of Fennec and Boba makes a good pairing, even though they're labeled as being from different series, because Fennec is labeled as the Book of Boba Fett, but the Boba Fett's from The Mandalorian. It's kind of interesting because basically they wear the same outfit in both series. So it's kind of interesting that they didn't just call Boba Fett like from the Book of Boba Fett, but they went with The Mandalorian instead. But the two of them work together very, very well. Of course, the Jedi Patrol Stormtrooper, that's going to work well for army building, for scenes, you know, because it looks like a very classic sand trooper. Obviously, this is the Rogue One version where it's not so much sort of sandy designation. There is some minor armor differences here, but still a great figure to army build. So it's good to see that these have hit shelves in decent amounts. I know that the Tython Boba Fett in particular was hot, that people really, really wanted to track that one down. So now that Farmers...
I was a little worried that we might miss out, but it's great to see these really well stocked on shelves.
We're seeing like about two or three of each figure at least. Hitting shelves at Farmers. So if you find one that doesn't have it, try your next nearest one.
Yeah, and Farmers also have a new wave of the 3.75 vintage collection figures that includes Queel, Bo-Katan and Mithril. Other stockists, we talked about the Black Kassantin figure in the Black Series 6-inch scale line a couple of podcasts back from memory. This figure is actually based on the comic series rather than technically the live action series. That may be in part just an excuse to cover up the fact that it is largely a kit-bashed figure making use of existing sculpts. Nevertheless, if you're a completist and are after this figure, a number of retailers have it. The pricing does vary quite a bit. A new independent online retailer, Freyaware, has it for $49. Toyko and Mighty Ape has it for $63. EB Games has it for an even higher price than that, but I wouldn't pay more than $63, and there are cheaper options if you can get your hands on them. EB Games does have the new Gaming Great Knight Brother Archer figure for $59. This is a follow-on from a earlier Knight Brother Warrior figure, both in the Gaming Great line from the Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order video game, of course. Just rounding out other action figure news, we don't have dates for these in New Zealand, but we'll be keeping our eye out for them. New vintage collection figures have been announced. These will be Target exclusives in the US, but that doesn't mean they won't be available locally. In the 3.75-inch TVC line, we can expect to see X-Woes, Cosca Reeves, and Megs Mayfield making an appearance. And in the Black Series 6-inch line, an Amazon exclusive Cad Bane figure will be available in the US winter of this year, so summer New Zealand time, quite a bit down the line in the year. From New Zealand Mint, in their Chibi line, which they are releasing one character per month, the latest character is the first prequel trilogy character, Queen Amidala.
Yeah, this is kind of a new and exciting one. Traditionally, the New Zealand Mint Chibi coin line has focused on original trilogy characters, the very classic ones, you know, Princess Leia, Han Solo, Stormtroopers and things like that. But in recent months, they've been expanding out into some of the other sort of licenses. We saw The Mandalorian and Grogu. We saw Boba Fett and Fennec as in their new versions. But this is the first coin from the prequel era. Usually they kind of jump in there with a Darth Maul or a Qui-Gon, one of the sort of wider appealing figures when it comes to sort of action figures and things like that. So I was very, very surprised and excited to see Queen Amidala being the first one from the Phantom Menace to be sort of released in this Chibi coin line. She is in her classic red throne room gown, perhaps one of the most sort of used in the sort of advertising for the Phantom Menace, a classic scene. So I'm very, very excited to see her represented. If you are a fan of collecting female character merchandise, this basically completes the set of the main female characters from the Chibi coin line. We have Princess Leia, Rey, and Queen Amidala. So that's very, very exciting. I'm kind of hoping that we might see an Ahsoka down the line. That was my guess. That was my guess for kind of the next female character to be in there, obviously on the tail of her appearance in the Book of Boba Fett as well as in The Mandalorian. So I'm kind of convinced that one will be down the line. And it's kind of interesting that we haven't seen many from the sequel era or even from The Mandalorian. We only got two coins from the sequels, Rey and Kylo, two coins from The Mandalorian and two from the Book of Boba Fett. So it'll be interesting to see if Amidala sort of heralds a wider collection from The Phantom Menace or whether we will just get like one or two as these other collections are and then they'll skip over to the next one. But all in all, very exciting. She hasn't sold out at time of recording. She's still available. The price is around sort of $150.
It's $150 for their standard release. These are silver legal tender coins, and they also come in a $300 version, which is the early numbers, I think 1 to 100, which comes in a premium case, and you're guaranteed to get one of those lower number editions. But the base price for the standard release is approximately $150. It varies because it's locked into the US dollar.
But they do offer free shipping within New Zealand, and they ship from Auckland, so they're pretty fast if you're keen on snagging these. I know sometimes if they sell out that they are available sometimes from Sideshow Collectibles in the US, but you will frustratingly pay international shipping and tax to basically freight it back from Sideshow in the US back to you in New Zealand. But that is a backup option if they do sell out very quickly in New Zealand. But I'm very excited that New Zealand Mint is continuing with their with their Star Wars coins. It is fun to have something not necessarily manufactured in New Zealand. I know some of the lines are manufactured by sort of a licensed partner, but it is still designed in New Zealand. A lot of them are made in New Zealand. It's very, very fun to have sort of New Zealand Mint branded Star Wars merchandise.
All right, let's talk about Star Wars Lego, because there's quite a few new sets that have been recently announced, some of which are currently available as we speak. First up, Boba Fett's Throne Room, set number 75326. 732 pieces, includes a series of minifigures. Characters are Boba Fett, Fennec Shand, Bib Fortuna, a Thielen Dancer, Wiki Guard, Gamorrean Guard, and a Quarren Squidhead. That is actually out now, priced at $169.99 from a number of retailers, including Mighty Ape. Coming up soon, expected release date is June the 1st, is a Naboo N1 Starfighter from the Book of Boba Fett. 412 pieces featuring Mando, Grogu, and Palimoto minifigures, and a tiny little BD figure too, I believe. That'll be priced at $109.99, and again, available on June the 1st.
That's a really cool figure, the little tiny BD. He's like one little Lego stud size. I thought that was a really cute inclusion. I honestly thought for Pelly they would include three Pit Droid figures, but I guess they decided to put in something unique there for the minifig collectors, something that hasn't really shown up to many other places. And I'm very excited to see the classic sort of Boba Fett and Fennec Shand in the Throne Room set. I think that that's a really cool set.
I like that Throne Room set. It's got some cool alien characters in there as well. Also, we're seeing a little army builder pack called the Dark Trooper Attack. This is set number 75324, 166 pieces, depicting the appearance of Luke Skywalker at the end of the second season of The Mandalorian, where he faces off against the Dark Troopers. It comes with four figures, a Luke Skywalker and three Dark Troopers. That's available now, priced at $59. Lego Star Wars helmets. We talked about the new releases a few podcasts back, but the Dark Trooper, Din Djarin Mandalorian helmet, and Luke Skywalker X-Wing pilot helmet are now all available, $99 each, and all the usual retailers in New Zealand have those, including Mighty Ape.
Yeah, it's fun to see this sort of line continuing on, including the Dark Trooper, which I guess technically isn't a helmet, but yeah, it fits in well there. I particularly like when you can sort of match up helmets. I think they look quite cool when you've got sort of two beside each other. So obviously the Dark Trooper goes really well next to Din Djarin. The Luke is a pretty good match for the previously released TIE Fighter helmet. I think Lego has been doing some really cool sets recently. I kind of hope that we might get like a little Boba Fett figure and a Bantha. I kind of want to see that as a Lego set. I think that that would go down a treat, because I love the little Lego versions of Banthas. I think that that would be quite funny. But I'm sure somebody can put those two together with like bits and pieces, Boba Fett from the throne room, and put get a Bantha from another set and put something together.
Yeah. A new book's been announced that I'm quite looking forward to. It's called the Star Wars Timelines book. This is a book that chronologically maps out key events, characters, and developments that shape the Star Wars story. It's been announced on StarWars.com and described as an all-new guide that breaks down the in-universe history of Star Wars for a stunning visual guide that spans from the time before the High Republic to the fall of the First Order, encompassing the Skywalker saga films, live action series and animation, books, comics, games and more. I quite like the idea of a reference book that is as all encompassing as that sounds like it's going to be. More on that when we have availability locally. Mighty Ape has a number of more of the high end statues available for pre-order. From Gentle Giant, they have the half-scale Tusken Raider. I really like that half-scale line, and the Tusken Raider is a cool addition. They also have a Milestones statue of Grogu on the Seeing Stone. Overall, that's 8 inches tall. It's priced at $450 locally, but that ends up being fairly reasonable compared to if you were able to buy it direct from Gentle Giant and find a way to ship it all the way to New Zealand. Also, just recently announced is from Star Wars Visions, the Ronin RTFX, aka Kotobukiya, statue in the 1/7 scale. That is available for $480 locally. That's a very cool rendition, a very neat artistic stylized statue from the very popular, well, one of the most popular episodes from Star Wars Visions. Funko had an event that they called the Funko Fair 2022 just recently, and they announced a number of exclusive products, all of which are going to be available for pre-order and coming out soon. More characters from Visions in Funko Pop vinyl format. We've got the twins, M and Car, for $25 each, $22 if you're a Primate member. They're due to be released on the 31st of March. And expanding from the Darth Maul Duel of the Fates Funko Pop series, we now also have Obi-Wan joining in. This will ultimately be a series of three Funko Pops that join together, Obi-Wan, Darth Maul, and Qui-Gon, with a Naboo Palace backdrop to recreate the Duel of the Fates lightsaber battle. Now, these are at the deluxe price point of $64. They'll be out on the Obi-Wan Kenobi one will be out on the 31st of March. And finally, also from the Funko Fair is a Darth Vader Artist Series. These are a series of Darth Vader Funko Pops, but they're painted up by various artists to represent a number of key locations within the Star Wars universe. So you have one representing Endor, one for Mustafar, also Hoth and Bespin. They ship with a protector and they're priced at $54 or $50 if you're a Primate member. They will be coming out on the 30th of April. But on that note, that's about it for this week's installment. I guess we are done doing talking. If you have any thoughts on the topics we discussed today, we're definitely keen to hear them. Let us know what you liked the most about the Obi-Wan Kenobi trailer. Leave a comment on the YouTube page or our website page for this podcast. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you taking your time to listen to us share our passion for Star Wars. Stay tuned to our website, swnz.co.nz, for Star Wars news for New Zealanders and another podcast episode next week. Don't forget, you can jump on over to either our Facebook group or the SWNZ message boards to discuss all the latest Star Wars news with other Kiwi fans. Kia ora, kia noho, haumaru. Thank you for listening and stay safe.
Tūro hawaiki. May the Force be with you.